American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Simon McBride. My brother-in-law, Sean Olbs of the Eiffels, was able to talk to Simon McBride over Zoom video. Simon is a highly gifted guitar player, singer, songwriter, and bandleader. Simon talks about growing up in Northern Ireland, playing 30 shows in 35 days, and his new single, Dead in the Water. You can watch the interview with Simon McBride and Sean of the Eiffels on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. And make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Simon McBride.
All right. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Good.
In the studio, I see, huh?
I live these days.
Yeah. One of the few places you can still be, right?
Yeah, it's it. It's my life these days. Usually before all this COVID stuff, I was never in here really.
So yeah.
Now I'm like permanently in this seat.
Well, it's, you know, there are worse places to be, right?
That's true. There definitely is worse places you could be, yeah. But that's why. So I am complaining. I'm surprised. I'm surrounded by lots of toys, as you can see.
Yeah, it looks great in there.
Yeah, it's my little man cave, or a working man cave, I think is the correct terminology.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, it's not so much a man cave as it's your lab, right?
That's it. It's my lab. It's my place of work these days. That's what we're doing.
I got a couple virtual backgrounds. I could join you in the studio right here. See?
There, yeah.
Maybe in a record store, but I'll just stick to the authentic home studio here.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's good.
Yeah.
You got a little Telecaster up in the back there.
Yeah, you? Good eye. It's real. It's real far back there, but yeah, that's a Tele.
Good.
Got a couple other ones over here too, but they're out of view. So thanks so much for joining us, and really interested in hearing your story. Sounds like you got some good ones. So why don't we jump into it? And how'd you get into music?
I got into music when I was about 9 or 10. My family's it's funny because in my whole entire family, I'm the only one that's musical at all.
Uh-huh.
No other member of my family plays a musical instrument, so it's not like it's something that's been kind of handed down through genes or DNA or whatever you want to call it. But my dad is a massive music fan.
Sure.
You know, there's always music going on in my house. And it was mostly Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Cream, you know, like kind of big, you know.
Yeah. The best stuff.
Yeah. Well, it was always there. It was always on. So, you know, music was, I just grew up around it, you know. And then it wasn't really until, I say it was about 9 or 10. And then my dad had bought a guitar for himself. But he couldn't play it because years ago when he was a kid, he tore all the tendons in his wrist. So
yikes.
It was very difficult for him. So
yeah.
Anyway, the guitar was lying around the house. And, when he went to work, I used to sneak in and just do what any 9-year-old kid does with a guitar. And buy his chords. And it was, I kind of really liked it. And then I discovered there was a little book, like a little tuition book, chord book, whatever, you know. And it had simple things like, D chord, A chord, and the old tunes. I think the first thing was like Green Sleeves or something like that. Silly. Single note thing. So I started learning that, but then my dad came in one day and caught me. To my surprise, I was horrified. I was like, I'm in trouble, man. Sorry for playing the guitar. And he's like, but he's seen I could play, and he's like, okay, all right. So he encouraged me then to practice. And so he did. I remember he made me practice for 20 minutes one day, and I cried, I think, for 20 minutes. Minutes. So that's kind of how I got started, and I ever since that I was kind of just hooked, you know, like practicing, you know, crying whilst practicing 20 minutes a day till practicing 8-9 hours a day, you
know. Uh-huh. Wow.
That was just on the guitar, you know.
Yeah.
The vocal thing I never got into later on, you know, mm-hmm. 10 years later or something. So, but yeah, that's how I got started. It's all very, it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, it's funny the way human psychology works. You know, you're sneaking in to use the guitar, which you're not supposed to use. And then when your dad tells you you have to use it, you're crying about it, you know?
Yeah, like, the old thing, you know, the kids will do the opposite of what your parents tell you that they...
Exactly. But that's, There's a lot worse things to be caught doing by your parents than playing guitar. You know, at least you were doing something productive, and that's good that he saw that and encouraged it.
Yeah, I was very lucky. You know, my mom and dad were very very good that way. They seemed, and plus I was kind of very fast at learning things anyway. So after a year or two, I was playing stuff by like Van Halen and guys like that, so I was pretty quick, you know.
Yeah, playing Van Halen.
Yeah, I think they kind of I had a bit of a natural ability, so they pushed where some parents wouldn't, especially living in Ireland. This music, you know, especially in that rock thing or whatever, you know, in Ireland, that doesn't really have a rock scene, and so you know, it would be more a case of, you know, and I know some people still to this day would say to me, "So when are you getting a real job?" And I'm like, "Okay, I've been doing it for like, you know, 22 years, so
but, yeah, I'm doing all right, mate."
yeah, I'm very lucky.
Yeah, well, next time just say, "I don't think ever." I think I'm okay with my fake job.
Yeah, that's it. You know, well. I think the UK government are trying to get all musicians now to retrain or whatever, but I'm not getting into that. I don't know.
Yeah. So growing up in Ireland and so there's not much of a rock scene. So you start playing a little bit and how did you make it work? Were you playing little, did you start by putting a band together with some friends from school? Did you get some little gigs, some house parties, or what were some of the first things you did?
Basically a lot of that, as I said, because there was not much rock thing going on or musicians going on in where I came from. So I didn't really have a school band or anything. I was always doing everything on my own. It started with my dad. He brought me to a few, you know, local gigs that had like rock cover bands. You know, these guys were all older. And I was like 14 or something at the time. Mm-hmm. So I used to get up and maybe play one or two songs, and you know, I used to be like the novelty highlight kid getting up and playing.
Oh, that's cool.
But doing that, and then it you know, obviously I progressed on the guitar, and then I started doing lots of TV shows. When I was 13 or 14.
Wow.
Lost kind of many I've done years. And then I started to do clinics for Marshall amps, when I was like 14 or 15.
Were those like promo videos content, or was that like just teaching classes for them, or what?
No, this was old school as you get. It was like you would have, like they would have a demonstration evening where they would invite a lot of people to, you know, take a gig.
Right.
For Marshall amps, or they'd have a big trade show, like in LA, they have an AM show. A little bit like that, and they would get me along.
Sure.
Just play songs. That's it. Great.
So, sure. And you said TV shows. Was that like the 14-year-old kid who can play guitar really well on like the local news kind of TV show, or was it different kinds of TV shows?
It was kind of like chat shows a lot of the time. You know, they would get me on, you know, quick interview. Probably got about two words out of me back then because I was 14 and didn't say
right.
Anything. Didn't ask me to speak, but so yeah, it was mostly chat shows, and then it was really lots of stuff like that. And then when I was 15, I won UK Guitarist of the Year. So
wow,
15. So you know, it's just kind of all. But it's funny. I didn't do it the way a lot of kids do it these days, as you said, get in a band, school, mates.
Right. Yeah.
I was always on my own.
Yeah. That's interesting for a rock guitarist, you know what I mean? Usually they're just itching to get into a band, you know?
Yeah. It was on, like, The first band I actually joined and played for was a band called Sweet Savage, which were a heavy rock band, and they were quite kind of big at the time. They were they had their previous guitar player who just left. It was a guy called Vivian Campbell, who plays for Def Leppard and Whitesnake and various other people. But
yeah,
I joined these guys and I played the albums, did some tours with those guys, and then and this is why I was 16, so you know,
well,
I was threw into the kind of professional scene straight away, you know, and I just went on to do various tours with other people as well after that. You know, so.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, if just focusing by yourself actually may have been a benefit to you, you know? I mean, obviously you're doing something right. You're winning best guitar awards and getting on talk shows and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think so. I think it gave me more... discipline to, you know, to practice and learn his guitars. As I said, I practiced like when I was a kid. Like I didn't have a teenage life, basically, like most kids these days have. I sat in my room and played guitar for 8-9 hours a day, 7 days a week for years.
Yeah. I mean, 9 hours a day, that'll do it.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, people always ask me, how do you get to be good? And I go, well, you got 9 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's dedication. The thing is, when you're playing an instrument or you fall in love with an instrument, it's just like it's all you want to do anyway. You know, it's like a sportsman, you know, playing football. All you want to do is play football all day.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, that's just what it is. It's your, like your calling card, or you want to call it. Guitar and music for me is just it's what I do. I don't know how to do anything else.
Right. So you said your dad forced you to play for 20 minutes, and then eventually got to 9 hours. Was that also your parents' influence? Was that them saying, if you want to do this, you got to do it seriously, and you have to play this long every day, or was that you saying, I want to do this because I love it?
It was me saying I wanted to do it. You know.
Okay.
You know, as I said, my mom and dad were very good. They initially pushed me to do 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, the more and more I played, the more and more I wanted to play.
Right.
So I remember when coming home from school, I did my homework or whatever it was as fast as I possibly could. So I started playing guitar.
Yeah. You
know, I wasn't interested in running out. You know, the other time I would go out and play with, you know, friends and stuff like that. But it was me, you know. It's all I wanted to do, you know. So I wasn't pushed into doing anything, you know.
And so when you're getting in these on these shows, did you have a manager? Were your parents reaching out to people? How were they finding out about you to get you on these talk shows?
It was really through my dad mostly at the start. Contacted people and. You know, because I was a minor, so you know, they were with me and all that. So I didn't really have a manager. I only really got a manager when I was in my late 20s.
Yeah.
But, no, the thing is, a manager is great, but a lot of things a manager does, you can do yourself.
Sure.
You know, generally a management company, well, it depends on the management company. If it's a big management company, if they can bring a lot to the table, great. But a lot of managers, all they do is liaise with the artist and the record company.
Right.
Fortunately enough, my last record company and my new record company, I got on like a house on fire with, you know, the owners. So I'm just like, I don't really need something in between. So, but yeah, it's a, no, no manager. But so I guess you could say my dad was managing.
Yeah. That must be an Irish expression. Got on like a house on fire, huh?
Yeah, I know. And it's funny, later on in life, when I was about in my 20s, I actually was in a house fire.
Yeah. I wonder where that comes from, but that's a good one. I'll have to look into that. I love hearing like UK slang. Euro trip. I was hanging out with a couple Scots one time, and I was having fun picking up on all their slang. But yeah. So 16-year-old kid, and you start doing these start touring with some pretty cool people. How was that? Was were you starting to see some of the rock and roll lifestyle seep in there a little bit? Was some of that fun starting to happen, or did they keep you kind of away from some of that stuff since you were a kid?
No, they. I was through straight in the deep end, basically. So to be honest, I only really started seeing the rock and roll side of it when I was let loose on my own, basically. Really, when I joined Andrew Strong. Andrew Strong was a singer from a movie called The Commitments, which was out a long time ago. Quite famous movie in Hollywood and stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was this guy, he's a singer, a phenomenal singer, but I toured the world with him for long years. So, and I'm not going to deny it. There was a lot of partying and a lot of, you know, wild things going on. So
yeah.
I did see the rock and roll lifestyle. Yeah. It was nowhere near as bad as like Motley Crue.
Sure. Well, who's as bad as Motley Crue, you know? That's a high bar to set.
Yeah, that was just carnage, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. I know because I play now with guys, you know, with Don Airey. He played keyboards with Ozzy Osbourne, and so he knows. He told me all the stories. I'm going.
Yeah, they toured with Ozzy for a while. Yeah.
So I remember Don just telling me he got on the Motley Crue tour bus, and he says it was just carnage.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about that. I'm not allowed to say carnage. But
yeah.
So the rock and roll thing was great. I was touring all over the world, just. You know, this 20 in my 20s, actually, I think it was a bit younger. It was just 18, maybe 18, 19. I can't remember now, but just touring, playing all different countries around the place and just gigs to, you know, thousands of people and just partying. You know, I remember at one stage being away for 6 weeks. And I think we were coming home the following week and I was going, I don't want to go home. It was just so much fun, and you understand why people want to stay on the road, and that's why musicians, you know, they basically tour until they die because it's what they love doing. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, playing music and getting to have fun, you know, there's no better lifestyle than that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you, I mean, I think for some people they love it, you know, and wouldn't rather be doing anything else. I think some people like just hanging out at home, or, you know, like the like a simpler life. But yeah, some people are Rolling Stones.
Everybody has their own thing, and you know, being a musician is an acquired taste. But some people take to it really well, and some people don't. You know, the other side of touring and stuff is it is hard. It's fun. The fun parts, you know, override the hard parts, you know, the thing.
Right.
When you're touring, a big thing, a big lesson you got to learn, and you got to be able to deal with this pretty quickly, is the lack of sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, you know, I was reading a bio of yours and it said, you know, you have many tour stories, but once you played 30 shows in 35 days, speaking of no sleep, do you recall that story? You want to tell us about that one?
Yeah, that was quite recent, actually. It was like only a few years ago I did about, it was a European tour, and basically, it was literally, I think we had, out of 7 days a week, it was six gigs on one day off. But one day was traveling, and I was just like that, back to back. Towards the end of that tour, you know, there was only three of us in the band, but we were just dead.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
No, we didn't. We obviously in the gig we put, you know, we gave everything we could.
Sure.
But it was just the last week or two, it just got very, very hard because, you know, people don't understand. It's like, you know, I remember doing some gigs, weeks of gigs where basically we do the gig, we wouldn't get back to the hotel till maybe 2 a.m. in the morning. Then you're up at 5, you know, get on the bus and you're driving for another 8-9 hours, do another gig, same thing. So you're lucky, you're getting roughly, you know, 3-4 hours sleep a night. And
yeah.
It's all in different levels though, you know. The higher up you're kind of bigger in is the bigger venues. You're that more higher up the ladder, as they call it.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier because you pick and choose. You don't have to gate every night.
Right.
It's like, if you're in Germany and you have one side of it one night and then you go to the other side of the other next night. They would go, oh, we'll just take that day, next day off, go to it. Well, when you're a smaller artist doing your own thing and playing in more smaller clubs and things like that, it's all about money.
Right, right.
Keep it financially afloat. But sometimes you just gotta do it. You just gotta play. Like, it doesn't bother me. Sometimes I would rather gig every night and be wrecked than just have days off. Because sometimes in those days off, you're just bored.
Yeah.
Waiting for the next,
Right, right.
But yeah, it sometimes can be tough, and sleep. The lack of sleep is the thing you just got to get used to. Once you get used to that, everything else is beautiful.
Yeah. So I, you've had some, great success musically. Was listening to your old album the other day, but you just dropped an EP a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah, well, it's actually there's been a few singles off the EP. Friday. The actual the main track of the EP, Trouble, comes out on Friday, whatever it that is, this Friday. Or Friday.
Yeah, so, yeah, you're right, because there's only three tracks on it, so it's more of a single than an EP.
Yeah, so I haven't released an album in 8 years. I've just been. I've had two kids in that period of time. So, I've just been doing other things and just touring with other artists. And Ian Gillan and Don Airey. That took up a lot of time too. So, I decided, I changed record company. It's a bigger label. And they want to push stuff out. So I had a load of songs written and ready to go. So it was just a matter of recording them. So, we decided, we'll put out some EPs and stuff. Actually, the album was supposed to be out this year, but COVID hit. So we decided to put out, an album at this point in time because, putting an album out, generally the standard rule of thumb is now where you put an album out, you go tour it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You put an album out, it's like, oh.
Yeah. Well, we're talking to people every day, multiple artists every day, and same story,
so we had the EPs there done, and we said, well, let's just release them. So because each EP has a track from the album anyway, like Friday Trouble, it's actually on the album, it's being next year. So it's just more of like keeping, the thing is with today and the modern music industry, it's about keeping your name in the frame, because there's so much out there. There's so much music out there. There's so many other things apart from music to take up people's mental space.
Yeah.
So it's just about keeping going.
Yeah.
That's really what it's about, I'm proud of the EPs. They're different. Because each EP has one original song and two covers. And then there's one live song. So there's four tracks on each EP. So basically, there's the original, and then there's two covers, and then there's a live one. The live one was basically done in a studio. We were in the middle of, I think it was that 30-day tour we were doing. We were in Germany somewhere, and the record company says, sure, why don't we come in for, I think we had 2 days or something off.
So right.
The studio, and just play your set, and we'll just record it. So that's what we did. And then recorded it back there. No overdubs, no nothing. That was it. It's like a little bonus thing to have. So we did that. It was challenging doing the covers. Some songs, because I'm of the opinion, if I'm going to do a cover of somebody's song, I want to do it justice, because too many people doing covers out there, and they're, when you listen to the original and listen to the new one or the cover effect.
Yeah, you got to do it. Do something differently, or do it justice at least. Otherwise, what's the point?
Exactly, because you think about it, right? Whoever's written that song or played that song, recorded that song originally, has put their heart and soul into that. Now, it wouldn't be fair to me or to them if I recorded it and just did, that'll do. Sticking anything down.
Sure. Plus, you set yourself up for to be, you know, the lesser of the comparisons. You know, if you don't do something different or, you know, do something interesting at least, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I try to do. I try to always put my own little spin on things, like we did on this EP. There was Kids Wanna Rock Brown Adams song, and I decided, okay. When I first listened to it, I was like, okay. First thing came to my mind was Foo Fighters. Mm-hmm. Old,
yeah, love that song.
And then I started playing that sort of vibe over it. I started, I don't know, just ideas started coming to mind, like Black Sabbath. A few things, the paranoia. So it all spiraled into this song. I went, okay, this is working. That's doing, you know, because some of the covers we tried, I played with it a bit and went, nah, it's not working. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting that vibe, that inspiration kicking in.
Yeah. Well, those are some great inspirations to draw from. Some Foo Fighters and Paranoid, some of the best.
Yep, they are indeed. They are some.
And I think that that Foo Fighters album, what's the name? All My Life is the, I think that's the song you were drawn for? All My Life, I've been searching. Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite Foo Fighters albums, if not my favorite.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular, that one. So it is.
So I think I jumped a little ahead, but you know, you were playing these gigs when you were, sixteen, all the way into your early 20s. It seems like from the way you talk about it, the transition from just kind of, being a kid to doing this for a living seemed pretty fluid, maybe because of your talent. Do you feel like that was the case? Do you feel like, hey, I was just doing these shows and then I started playing with some bands and I was never too worried about it, you know, getting a real job, because it seemed like you kind of had some momentum from the beginning. Was that the case?
Pretty much so. You know, as I said, because I've been thrown into it since I was, you know, when I was a kid, like 12 or 13, doing lots of TV shows and stuff, and everything just kind of just seemed to fall into place. So, you know, the thought of going to get a job, like I worked in a music store when I was a kid, but
yeah,
that's not a job. That's not
right, sure.
Oh, it is. Sure. On the bar all day in a music store.
Right. So,
but yeah, it was pretty easy for me just to, it was just after the age of 10, it was like my life was planned out. That's it. I'm going to be a musician. That's what I. That's all I wanted to be. Also, my parents really encouraged me to do that. You know. And I've just been lucky enough, to be honest. You know that I've got where I am. You know. Obviously, everybody says they can always do better, or, you know, or like I always say, the big one for me is I wish I was born 10 years earlier. You know, then I would have grew up in that 80s rock thing, and that would, you know, because I could play like that, you know.
Sure. So, yeah, you're a shredder.
So, but, you know, it is what it is. Life is life, and the path that I've taken has just led me to where I am right now. But everything's been relatively easy. You know, I think when you have a talent, mm-hmm. and you're thrown into a situation, whether it's a rock band or a soul band, you have talent, you can pretty much get to grips with it pretty quickly. Because I honestly do not remember any situations where I went, that was hard. Mm-hmm. Cope with, you know, mentally or anything. It was pretty easy. So, transition-wise, it was just pretty easy for me. You know, just jump from one thing to the other, but I just jump straight in. Yeah, because I went from Sweet Savage, which were a heavy metal band, to Army Strong, which was a soul R&B band.
So yeah.
You know, you go from being the number one in the band, it's all guitar, shred stuff, to, okay, you're part of a 9-piece band. You just sit in the background and play.
Yeah.
You know, but I loved it. I thought this was great. You know, I'm single and I get paid to do this. Uh-huh. Yeah, party. But it was also a learning curve for me musically, because obviously it's a different style of music, different way of playing. You know, so it's all different things like chords and techniques. So I had to, you know, get my head around as well. But
Do you think that maybe, because, you know, I know near the beginning you said there might have been some hesitation because you're growing up in Ireland and there's not much of a scene there. But do you think that that also may have been somewhat of an advantage because maybe you are a larger fish in a smaller pond?
Well, the thing is that the advantage of it is for me is I, like, still to this day, I don't do anything in Ireland. I live here. Mm-hmm. Well, I cannot tell you the last time I did a gig here. It was years ago.
Ah, okay.
All my work or everything that I do is me getting on a plane and flying somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So that's the advantage I've had from, you know, the situation here. Because I see a lot of musicians here and they have a lot of talent initially.
Mm-hmm.
But they get drawn into the trap of just playing cover gigs and stuff, and you know, they start at a level musicianship, you know, the technique and theory and all is great. They're really enthusiastic, but it becomes like a job then. And their technique just gradually goes like that. And it's all about, it's just money and it's safe. So that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're in the big bad world, it's like, no, it's nothing really to do with money. Important, mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's about how good you are.
Mm-hmm.
Especially I find like, England, you know, London is like just what? It's a 20-mile stretch of water between here and London, or in England.
Yeah.
But it's a different mentality completely over there. You know, in England, it's like you're a guitarist and you're in a gig. You always have to remember this one thing. There's somebody standing about 2 centimeters behind you waiting to get into your gig.
Yeah.
And they're just as good, or if not better. But
right.
So it's like you always have to be on top of your game, and that's the thing that annoys me with here with some musicians, because I see them and I go, they're incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Please get out of Ireland, move on.
Right, right.
The thing is, if you look at all the great musicians that come out of Ireland, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gary Moore, great guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, unfortunately, no longer with us, but he moved to London when he was a kid. You know, Rory Gallagher didn't turn around, mm-hmm. toured all around Europe, you know.
Yeah.
And Lizzie, the same. U2,
yeah.
All these mm-hmm. bands who made it big got out of here. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Ireland, but there's a certain mentality about it.
Sure. Which,
I think there's just back or something. And
yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, not everywhere is an entertainment hub, you know, and so if you want to, like you said, competition sharpens your skills, so, you know.
But that's the thing. The other thing is Ireland is a big music place, but it's mostly mm-hmm. Irish traditional music or Irish country music. Mm-hmm. For rock, not really a scene for me for guitar or rock music, so that's why anything like that, better just to get out of it.
Right, right.
Some people may disagree, but
yeah. No, that's just because a place isn't good for a certain type of business doesn't mean that you don't love it. Simon, it's been awesome meeting you. I know we're taking up we're going a little bit over your time here, so I'm gonna ask you. We like to wrap up the interviews by asking if you had one piece of advice to give to aspiring artists, what would it be?
Never give up. Basically, just keep going and. Just always move with the times, whatever's happening, move with it, you know. I've learned in years that never try to fight the industry. The industry, it's always going to be 10 times bigger than what you are. So just keep going, go with whatever's out there. Like, you know, we can all moan about Spotify and Apple Music and you just don't get paid, but we still need it. You know, we need Spotify, but it's just never give up, because you just never know. Like, I know artists who don't make it and are on the verge of giving up, and then bang, something happens. And it's like, oh, okay. Last week I was just about getting a job in my local supermarket, but okay, now I'm playing thousands of people. So
yeah.
Just never get up and just keep practicing, keep doing music. That's what it's all about. You know, if you feel it, it's in your heart.